Welcome to the Prickly Couch podcast, where three mujeres have real conversations. We'll share our stories and talk about wellness, familias, work, and everything in between in our experiences as Latina women.
Could you tell us and the audience about yourself, who you are as a therapist, and also generally as a human being?
Yeah, for sure. So I was actually on a podcast recently with other colleagues of mine, and I briefly introduced like myself and what I do, but I think answering who I am as a human will inform a lot as to who I am as a therapist, because that's generally how I view life. Is like, we are all just here, we're all human, and we're all just doing our best to, I mean, lately it's felt like doing our best to survive. So I'm trying to get a little bit past that and actually like get more joy into my life and be present more. So who I am as a human, I love and fiercely passionate about music. And I am also fiercely passionate about mental health, because I know that it's like a broad overview and therapy is just a small subset of that. And kind of relevant to both, I'm very, very interested in spirituality. And I have my own relationship with my spirituality and the way that I am learning, constantly learning and understanding as I progress and move forward. And all of those things, alongside all of my intersecting identities, really inform who I am as a therapist and how I show up in the room. You know, obviously you get all of the trainings in grad school and you have to do all the recordings and you're watched and critiqued on that. So I know how to like hold a session in the standard of that they set. But first and foremost, I always just try to show up as a human being. Like I try to relate to the clients as like, yeah, dude, it sucks. It sucks sometimes. But listen, I have a lot of knowledge. I have a lot of tools. And together we're going to figure out how to get you to a place where you're feeling just a little bit happier. You're like balancing out all of the negative emotions. So yeah, I love to laugh in session. I also love the insight that clients bring. And a lot of my clients are really funny, which is awesome. Yeah. it's really fun. And so that's kind of who I am summarized.
Yeah. You said, and a lot of things came up to my head as you were talking, which is lovely. And the more that we do these interviews with you all, or we have these conversations and we ask the question, like, who are you as a human being? The more I know, like, realize that I love that question, and the more I learn about you all. And I realize that many of this, like the therapists, are very creative when they're creative and in their own special way. So I'm really excited to hear that, especially that you all honor humor as someone who uses humor sometimes as like a, I don't know, way to express themselves in different ways. But yeah, I really loved hearing about that. And if you could tell us a little more about how you, like how all these intersecting like identities come together, because I think that's really interesting. You talked about spirituality, you talked about like humor, music, and how does that show up, I guess, in your sessions? Or you could tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, for sure. So I think that's a two-part answer, because you can't really express how I show up in session without kind of getting into like who I am. And it's so interesting that you had this question, because I had my own therapy today. And this is kind of something we were talking about, where it was like, for the longest time, I thought you had to address things separately. Like you have to address parts of yourself separately. And I'm learning that it's actually like an integration, where you, the parts will help each other kind of move forward and heal. And so that's where all of my passions and like love for things and love for other humans and intersecting identities really come into play, is like I'm just learning to embrace the way they spill over into each other. And so, I mean, first and foremost, like a really big part of my identity is that I'm Mexican American. I'm a first generation. So I grew up with a family of Mexican immigrants, and I love them to death. And, you know, there's also family dynamics and generational trauma. And that was really, learning about generational trauma in undergrad is really what led me to want to do this and become passionate about it. And then for pretty much my whole life, my mom was always really great about like holistic approaches. She actually got into her own spirituality when I was very young. And so from a very young age, I was learning about like energy and chakras and just like the power of your word and the power of your thoughts. And she would also really encourage like, yes, I'll take you to therapy, but also like, would you be interested in a Reiki session? Or would you be interested in like a craniosacral session? And I feel like kind of being, allowing myself and surrendering to just any tools that would help me move forward with everything that I was encountering in my life really gives me the ability now to recognize that therapy is simply a small step in like the whole process of really moving forward and moving through it and healing. And that's why I really try to emphasize that in session. So that's one of the ways I show up in session is like, I really do bring this macro perspective of like, well, we're energetic beings and like this has been proven, and so like we talk about energy exchange and are you giving more than you're replenishing, and I feel like that resonates a lot with the clients and it really gives them language to be able to articulate like where they're at. Same with being trauma informed is like I give them a lot of language around like nervous system and nervous system regulation and like the window of tolerance, which we always talk to death. But something you said earlier was really impactful because I am also discovering that a lot of therapists are creative and a lot of my clients are also creative. And so there are a lot of sessions that we kind of utilize their creativity and their passion to help them move through things where they might feel stuck or that may feel it's like too overwhelming. And that has been really cool to experience. And so I feel like I am a culmination of all of the experiences that I've had, but the way that I've learned from them and chosen to integrate that into who I am today is what you see. Like you really do just get what you see. Like from the minute that someone is wanting to meet with me for a free consultation, it's like, I'm going to be myself, obviously within reason. Like I'm not just going to show up as like Hannah, like I'm Hannah the therapist. Yeah. There's guidelines, but for the most part, I do my best to kind of just reassure the person on the other side that I'm not here to judge. Like I'm genuinely not, because life is hard. Yeah. And I just want to help. And so how can we do that?
Yeah. I love that you highlighted the reciprocal relationship between the therapist and the client and how, you know, you're creative, they're creative, and how it kind of, visually, I'm a visual thinker.
Yeah,
I just think of a circle and like just, you know.
Yes.
What I really admire about you and about the therapist at Prickly Pear is that you really make an effort to show up authentically. And I'm getting that message over and over again, and it makes me feel, you know, really happy and really encouraged. So thank you for sharing all of that. And
yeah, of course.
Another common thread is that, you know, there's that identity of being a trauma therapist and specifically a trauma therapist that provides affirmative care.
Is kind of what I was talking about in the beginning, which is this recognition that we are all human beings going through life at this current iteration of time. And within that, we are all having our own individual experiences. There is genuinely no other person on the planet that will know what you are experiencing in every given moment. It's your perception. It's the way that you're filtering information through your senses. And I've come to understand that at various levels, where it's like you understand it from a trauma perspective, which is everything having to do with the regulation of the nervous system and emotional regulation. But then I also understand it from the spiritual perspective of how maybe sometimes we encounter cyclical experiences or we seem to be encountering the same circumstances like over and over again. And I've come to understand that that happens when we're having a challenge understanding what we're supposed mm-hmm. to learn from that, or like evolving to like the next iteration of ourself. And so providing affirmative care, I think, is definitely an ongoing process. There will always be more to learn. There will always be more to inform yourself about and more to expand your awareness of. And so first and foremost, what I try to do to make sure the session is an affirmative space, and also just like people who surround me to feel that it's an affirmative space, is simply to just accept that there's other human experiences out there that don't align with mine. Mm-hmm. And that's really it. It's not to judge. It's not to criticize. It's not to be like, maybe you shouldn't be doing that. It's to really just be like, okay, let's talk about why. Let's try to figure it out. And if it really is causing you distress, then we'll find a way to move forward. But if it's not, maybe we need to work on you just accepting that this is who you are, which I know has been a big theme for me in my own therapy. Mm-hmm. And I think I had this realization very recently, because at first with affirmative spaces, I was like, oh, neurodivergence, which is also like a really big part of my recent identity. It's been like a recent kind of realization and development of like, oh, my brain does process mm-hmm. things differently. And I definitely resonate with all of like the neuro spicy TikTok. So, you know, I was on that side of like, maybe there's something here, right? Yeah, same. And so for the longest time, I just thought like, oh, okay, an affirmative space is just kind of like welcomes all and doesn't judge. But I think I added the part of like, it's a continuously learning process, because I had a conversation with Gabby. And she's learning so much about neurodivergence, because she's doing like these really cool assessments, and I'm like nerding out about it. And she told me that she's learning like what an affirmative space actually is, and that it was different from the impression she had. And it really blew my mind, because I was like, oh, wow. Like, yeah, that definitely does kind of change the way that I was referring to it. And so I just added that last part of like, it's just, you know, you are where you are with your level of understanding in any given moment. And it's just about, can you expand it just a little bit further? Can you accept what you are perceiving? Or if you can't, can you identify the resistance around it?
Yeah. Could you give us an example, or maybe just walk us through how that would look like in like neuroaffirmative therapy? And just so for those that were neuroaffirmative, the term itself is new, mm-hmm. just so they can get an idea of what it looks like.
Yeah, for sure. Something that comes up a lot with the clients that I work with, because a lot of the clients that I work with are like first or second generation, if not immigrants themselves. And something that comes up a lot with these individuals that are also resonating with neurodivergence is the self-talk, right? It's mm-hmm. like, we are the way that we are, and our brains work the way that they work. But rather than working with that and working towards accepting that, there seems to be so much stigma and like just harshness around being different. And it's almost like harshness around having like individuality or having like uniqueness. Mm-hmm. And so I guess an example would be if a client is talking about the way they are perceiving something, because that's often the way that I will phrase questions. It's like, how are you perceiving it? Or like, what sensations are coming up in your body? I'm very like somatic experiencing in mm-hmm. that way. And then in their response, sometimes I will gently point out that, you know, there is a resistance to accepting that that is how your brain works. You know, there's mm-hmm. like a harshness of, I shouldn't have done that, or that was impulsive, or like, you know, there's just a constant guilt and judgment. Mm-hmm. And so slowly I bring awareness to it, not in a way that is just like straightforward and like, hey, you're kind of talking about this in a way that might be harmful to you, but I definitely will start to acknowledge it and hopefully get to a point with the client where they're like, oh, okay, like this really is just who I am, and I just have to learn to accept that. And I was like, exactly. Like, it's about moving away from judgment and criticism of yourself and moving more towards like loving kindness and acceptance.
Which is, you know, the goal and sometimes why we seek therapy, right? To be kinder with ourselves and seek that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to ask, just in case somebody was wondering, they're like, how, like, why would this be important to just like phrase it as neuroformative approach? Like, I think, yeah, if for those who are wondering, like, why is this important? Like, why do I need to think of it that way? Or why can't I just be like, I don't know, it just, I just didn't like that about myself and then move on, right? Like, why, what is this, the benefits of this neuroaffirmative approach and why is it important?
This is a really good question. The importance of a neuroaffirmative space and just really affirmative spaces in general is to teach us that we are deserving of acceptance and we are deserving of love. And if there are parts of yourself that you don't accept out of fear or out of guilt, then it also becomes a safe space for self-forgiveness. And so really creating an affirmative space, and I think recently with the, you know, uptick, I think because of like TikTok and social media of neurodivergence and a lot of people aligning and resonating with that, it's important now more than ever, especially in the therapy room, to meet the client where they're at, but also encourage them to move towards like that loving kindness or to move toward that self-forgiveness or that acceptance. And rather than kind of shepherd them along and get them to that point, the way that I like to approach it is by providing the affirmative space and being very mindful in particular about the language that I'm using, but also more so equipping them with the tools so that they can get to those places themselves. So then that way they know how to do it in their life. So I think the importance, like down to the core, is because this is another framework that really moves humanity towards acceptance and just this understanding that yes, we're all human beings living on this planet, but we're all very individually unique. We all bring our own signature when we're interacting with other humans or when we're working in a certain capacity, and this is a way of honoring those differences.
Yeah, it kind of makes me think of, you know, when we talk about self-love and acceptance as being just a radical thing, and it sounds kind of silly sometimes because how could that be radical, but at, sometimes that's how it feels like. Do you think that this is tied to, has some ties to social justice?
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that and what your opinions are?
I think the energy and the intent behind social justice is such a beautiful thing because it's quite literally masses of humans coming together to rally behind a cause. And I'm obviously more so on the side of inclusivity and acceptance of all humans. And in a state like Texas, that can be very difficult to honor and hold and move forward sometimes. This is kind of like a random thing, but that's a little bit why I moved out of Texas. Like I am currently living in Jersey City, and it was because I needed to get away from that mindset and that mentality, because it was genuinely having a direct effect on me and how I was showing up as a human and especially like as a therapist. And so I think everything is tied into social justice. And I think that social justice, when focused correctly and placed, and the attention is placed on just moving us toward just accepting differences, it's a beautiful thing. And when it comes to neurodivergence specifically, I think there's a lot of speculation, there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of just like, no, you have to conform, you have to like, you know, just be a cog in the machine, just kind of let the system round out who you're meant to be as a person. And so when it comes to social justice and neuroaffirmative care, I am definitely like a huge advocate, because at the end of the day, I just want everyone to have the capacity to love themselves and love others. And if we continuously judge others or try to police bodies or try to tell others how they're supposed to be and how they're supposed to show up, it creates kind of this torture chamber of who am I, you know, and it becomes like an existential dready question instead of this beautiful curiosity of, oh my God, let me explore who I am. It's kind of like, no, like I have to be this person. So yeah. I definitely think that all of those movements are so important, and all of the people and emotional labor that goes into that is so wonderful to see, and also impactful for me on a personal level, because it gives me this sense of camaraderie of like, oh, okay, there's other humans that want the same things that I do. Like my way of thinking isn't that extreme of just kind of wanting like love and peace and kindness. Cause I do feel very hippie sometimes when I say those things, but it's very encouraging to see how passionate other humans get about equality and about justice in general.
Yeah, and I can imagine the ripple effect. It's like a client with you learning how to self-love and self-accept themselves, and how that will ripple down to the way that they see others. And I think that's beautiful. I think y'all are doing an amazing job by putting that at the forefront of the practice. And yeah, could you talk about the age that you work with?
Yeah.
With your clients, like, do you have a range, or do you see a variety of ages?
I think I have a range, even though I like to think that I don't. I love working with individuals in their early 20s, mid 20s. It's such a, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, it's such a like juicy time in your life, like your early 20s. There's just so much confusion, and I just love working with people who want to address that. And I also love working with anybody up until like 40s and mid 40s and late 40s, you know, like that's also, I think like every age has its unique overview when it comes to lessons. And so I genuinely just love to work with like 20s and 30s and 40s, because they're also different, but they intertwine with themselves.
And do you approach them differently? You know, the earlier 20s with the juicy lives versus, you know, the past 30s or like closer to 40 age group. How do you approach those groups, and what are the similarities and differences?
That is such an interesting and good question. I have never thought of it that way before, because for me, I'm meeting the human, and they are just at the age that they are when they come see me. But I do think inherently it gets approached differently. And I would imagine that their age and experience has a big influence on that, because it's going to influence the way that they show up in the consultation or the way that they show up at the intake session. So I probably do approach it differently. You know, like there is so much you absorb, and you know, your values change a lot from your 20s to your 30s to your 40s. Like there's your priorities change. So it really, really just depends on the human in front of me.
I really like that. That makes my heart like my heart happy, meeting that individual. And you keep saying that, and I think it just proves, you keep proving it and proving it, that is what you value, the individual and how they show up. I wanted to talk to you also about the in-person and versus telehealth, because, you know, since the pandemic has started, the telehealth has been more available to some folks. Mm-hmm. And I think at this point, some people even prefer it over in-person. And I wonder if you approach that differently when making sure that you want a neuroformative approach in like a trauma informed space.
Yeah, that is also a really great question. For me personally, I am a therapist pandemic baby. I literally, right when I was supposed to start seeing clients while still in grad school, because you have to do like practicum and internship while you're in school, that was when the world shut down. And so all of my training was virtual, literally all of it. And so really my only experience with in-person has been my own therapeutic experience going in person. And that was when I was in my early 20s. So I think, again, and I keep, you know, beating the horse with this, really driving it home here, but it's going to depend on the individual and the way that they view or what they want to get out of therapy. I think that that would be like the biggest question I would have for them is like, I always do ask my clients if they're okay with virtual. Obviously, if they're setting up a consultation with me, they know that already because our admin does a really great job at like letting them know, like, by the way, Hannah's completely virtual. It's like, yeah, I'm not in Texas. so I couldn't see you in person even if I wanted to. But it is, I think, different. But I think the way that it impacts clients positively is that it is accessible. And you can be in an environment you feel safe in. Not to say that our office doesn't feel safe. Our office is super cozy with all of the weighted blankets and like the, you know, the scents.
Yes.
It's so nice. So nice. But I think there's something about doing therapy from your own home or from your own bedroom or like from, you know, the your favorite corner of the house that can kind of, it brings something different to the session. For sure. And then, you know, sometimes clients, life is life in. And I love that phrase. I took it from Raisley, who's another one of our colleagues and a good friend of mine. But
life
so
is life in, you said?
She'll say like, life is life in. I'm like, I love that. It's so true. It is. So sometimes they have to do sessions from their car. Or sometimes, you know, they're like in the weirdest environment, and as long as you make sure that they are, you know, in a private space and that it's confidential and that first and foremost they feel safe having those kinds of discussions wherever they find themselves, that's what I really try to focus on when it comes to virtual. I don't know how my therapeutic career will evolve in the sense of like, will I get a dual license in New Jersey and then I can see clients in person, or like, will I go back to Texas and then I can see clients in person? So as for right now, I'm really vibing with virtual. Even from like the therapist side, it's really nice because I end a session and I'm in my home, and it's nice to reset in that way. So this is kind of what I'm vibing with right now. It's virtual spaces.
Yes, I personally also love the virtual like setting.
It's so nice.
It's so helpful for the, you know, those introverts. The less people you'll have to come in contact
with.
That's true too.
It took away all that social anxiety for sure.
Exactly. So Hannah, we're getting close to the end, and thank you so much for, you know, being here. So we also wanted to ask, like, what can clients expect when working with you?
Well, kind of what you see is what you get, or I guess what you hear is what you get in this podcast. So if
that is going to be the title,
listening, what you hear is what you're getting. So if you've heard the podcast up until this point, that kind of can give you a good idea of how I show up and the kind of energy I want to bring into the sessions and the consultations, and also just kind of, I just want to support humans in general on wherever they may find themselves in the healing journey. So even if there's a consultation and it's like, I don't know if this is going to be a good fit, hopefully we can provide you referrals or resources or some sort of support to get you to where you do want to be. So to me, it's like, you can expect someone who is truly acting in your best interest, because that is the intention I'm placing behind meeting people for this kind of stuff. You really need to trust your therapist. Like, you really need to have a good fit with them, and you really need to feel like you can bring up anything in order for this kind of work, especially trauma work, to like evolve you in the way that it's meant to, rather than continuously like debilitate your ability to show up in the world.
Thank you. Thank you. That was lovely advice. Thank you so much, Hannah, for joining and for this lovely conversation. You have the greatest energy.
So this
Thank you. Got it. Awesome. Thank you.